Miriam needs no introduction. Miriam Bowman Kuntz, we've known her her whole life. She was commissioned, called, and sent by the ELCA and Bethel, and was in Hungary for the better part of a year, returned this summer, and before she could get her land legs, she was off to do graduate work at the in chemistry, PhD in chemistry at University of Wisconsin in Madison. So this was our first time Thanksgiving break to get her back to share with us her experience as a young adult in global mission. So,
yeah. Thank you. Thanks. So yeah, I said this when I came back, I said this before I left, but thanks to Bethel and to all of you individually as well for supporting me in this year, for being one of the reasons why I felt called to serve in Hungary in the first place. So I just want to take care of that right away because it's very important to me to once again thank you guys. So I did my year of young adults in global mission in Hungary. But first, what is YAGM? I believe I'm the second person from Bethel to do YAGM. Claire Flesh did it before me, which is how I first found out about it. But it currently, it's a program through the ELCA Global Missions for young people ages 21 through 30. And it has 11 country programs around the world. So my year, there was Mexico, Argentina, Uruguay, Senegal, Southern Africa, Rwanda, Madagascar, the UK, Central Europe, Jerusalem West Bank, Cambodia, and Australia. So there's lots of options. And we don't get to choose where we go. It's a mutual discernment process by the program and by the participants. And so every year, so my year, there were about 85, by the end of the year, 80 of us all around the world serving in some capacity or another. This year there are more than 90, which is pretty amazing. So, yeah. So I was in Central Europe, but the year I was there, we only had volunteers in Hungary. So in case you're not super great with geography, no problem. Hungary's right here, right in the middle of Europe. And I was living in Nyíregyháza, which is up here in the northeastern corner of Hungary. So there's a lot of history around Hungary, and I find it really interesting, so I'm going to work really hard and not go on and on about it. But it definitely plays a mindset. The history there is like very important to the mindset even today, even the things that happened 500 years ago. So there's this long, long history of occupation in Hungary, starting in the 13th century by the Mongols, I think it was, and then it was by the Ottomans. And then, of course, they were part of the Habsburg Empire, so they were still basically being occupied then by the Austrians. And near the end of that time, they did have more of their own autonomy up until the First World War. And so up until this is what was considered the Kingdom of Hungary up until the First World War. And then they were on the losing side of the First World War, and so this large area was cut down to what is present-day Hungary. So all of this is Transylvania, so that's especially really painful to many people in Hungary still today. To like, Transylvania is this beautiful, the most beautiful part of former Hungary, and all of a sudden it was gone. And so many people still refer to this as like, oh, this is like true Hungary. And so after all of this land was taken away, so 2/3 of the land was gone, and 1/3 of the population was now parts of other countries. And these parts that were taken away, that were no longer part of Hungary, there were large populations of other ethnicities, of Slovaks or Romanians or Serbs living in those areas, which is how they somewhat decided to make those boundaries. But it's still very painful to many people in Hungary still today. And then there was they were also not fortunate in World War II, and were behind, were under communism until 1990. So until very recently, it's basically been an occupied country, or as many Hungarians see it. So that's very present in the mindset of the people living there today still. Less so in the young people who are growing up in a very different environment than their parents or grandparents especially. But pretty pessimistic.
What's your government form now?
Representative democracy, but not super representative. Yeah, they've got the person in charge, Viktor Orban. He has gone back and forth from being president and prime minister, and basically whichever one he holds is the one that has the most power. And yeah, it's pretty right-wing right now, but it's a democracy, you know, and they get more people to vote than we do. So that's all I'll say about hunger for now. I'd be happy to talk more about it later if people have questions. I was living in Nyíregyháza, which I said was in the northeastern corner, and this is just like looking down the street in my neighborhood. Nyíregyháza was founded actually by Slovak Lutherans who had gone south to southeastern Hungary, and then there was incentive to move north, so they actually founded the city I lived in, even though Hungary is predominantly Catholic, and so is the city I was living in. But there is a strong Lutheran history there, which was pretty cool to be around. So this is in the town square, my favorite statue. It's someone slaying a dragon. And yeah, so this is in the springtime. I love the flowers. I always love this bucket. It's got the flowers spilling out of it that are planted at the ground. So it's a pretty surrounded by farms. I would walk 10 minutes from my house where I was living, and there were farms. One of the homeless shelters I was working at bordered up against farms. But the city was still a pretty happening place. There was a university there. So, it was about 120,000 people. So it had everything that one needed and a little bit more, but it still wasn't very big. And one of the things I loved about my time in Hungary and Europe in general was all the amazing churches. Like, we don't have churches like this in the U.S. So this is the big Lutheran church in Nyíregyháza where I sang with the choir. And I didn't actually attend church here, but this is where the choir sang. And this was built in 1785, I believe. And there's a great story behind it, but I won't go into it now, but it's very, very beautiful, very cold. They're probably not worshiping there right now because it's too cold to worship in there. So they go across the street to another place that has heating. And then this is the big Catholic church in the center with just some friends. It was a happening place as far as Hungary goes, but it's not saying a whole lot. We had all four seasons. It was kind of like living in the Midwest. This is behind my apartment. Nyíregyháza translates to birch church. Near means birch, and Egyház means church. So my friends and I, we called it Birch Church City among ourselves. So here's just, lots of birch trees. This is the first frost. And this is walking down, I think, the same street that I showed a picture of earlier. So very beautiful. I always loved the sky while I was there. There we go. Okay, and so springtime as well. Very beautiful, not this fantastic landscape, no mountains, no beaches, but beautiful in its own way. Just, like a tree on my walk on the way to work. Like the flowers at my pastor's mom's house, her tulips. And this is my pastor's mom's house, actually. We would go there quite frequently on the weekend. And her mom lived by herself, but still had this huge orchard and chickens and beautiful flowers. And so my pastor would go there on the weekends and do all the heavy lifting. But those are some of my favorite weekends there. The other Yagam, who was living in the same city, and I, we would go and eat lunch, and you know, she was great, and yeah. So again, this is like a 10-15 minute drive from like the big city center, but you know, it's, we were in the country. So in terms of my placement, my living situation, I started off living the year in a college dorm. I showed up and the Tuesday, or like 2 days before I was supposed to go to my city where I was living during orientation, my country coordinator came up. She's like, "So we don't know where you're going to be living, but we're going to find something." So my pastor, who had another Yagam, she wasn't technically my mentor, but she was like, "All right, I'm going to take care of you." So she found me a place at the dorm where the other Yagam was living. So I lived there for about a month and a half. And finally, they kept asking and asking at church. And finally, this one right here, Yutsi Nani, took me in. She's like, later she said, she was explaining to my country coordinator why she decided to take me in. She's like, "You know, they just kept asking." I was like, "If no one's going to take this girl in, I guess I have to." So that's how I ended up with Yutsi Nani. And this is her daughter, Aniko. Aniko didn't, she actually moved out right before I got to Hungary. But she was still there on the weekends quite a bit. So, yeah, so this was my family in Hungary. Living with Yutsi Nani was like, I imagine what living with a grandma is like. Always, you know, yelling at me for not, you know, washing my clothes the right way. Always making me eat more food. Getting upset when she doesn't know what time I'm gonna come home, and no, but she was great. She, a very funny woman, very hospitable, and I'll talk more about her later. But that, so that was my living situation. It was a 2-bedroom apartment, pretty small, but yeah, it was great. It was home. And so, in terms of my job, which really is secondary to Yagam, but I was working in 2 homeless shelters through the same ministry. The first was, I started my days off every day going to the Otolom Naepkonya, which means daily kitchen. And so it was a drop-in shelter for homeless people during the day, and they would come, and there was a place they could shower, they could wash their clothes, they could store things, there were medical services, there were all sorts of services, and then every day there was also a hot meal, which we served. And yeah, so that was what I did. I mostly just washed dishes. It wasn't anything extravagant, but and I honestly hardly interacted with the people we were serving. The people I was really interacting with or my coworkers. So this is Ferenc or Ferry. This is Marian, Shandor or Shani, and then this is Polly. And so they were the people who took care of me and my work life, especially Shani and Polly. Shani, anytime he was very intentional about asking me questions, and he taught me all of my Hungarian history, I'm pretty sure. So, which is hard to learn when you don't speak Hungarian and they only speak Hungarian, but, you know, we managed to make it work. And then Polly, my favorite story about him is it was the day after the election, and I was, of course, very upset, and they knew I was going to be upset when they found out, and so he was very intentional about just, like, trying to make me laugh. And so that's my favorite story about Polly. A little bit, yeah, yeah. They didn't seem to care about the election, so it was easy to at least push it to the back of my mind for a little bit. And then the other place I worked was the Anya Oval, which means mother's home, sort of. And so that was a homeless shelter for women and families. And it was women trying to escape abuse, or just a way to keep families together when otherwise, you know, they might be taken into custody by the state. So that's what I did there. I would ride my bike from here to the Añovo, which was about a 35-minute bike ride. I loved it. And then I would wait for the kids to come home from school, and then we would just hang out, do whatever they wanted, play, color. It was great once the weather got nice, because then we would just like hang out outside, draw with some chalk, or play in the swing set. And so that was really rewarding. Again, my presence, what the work I was doing there wasn't really what was important. It was just my presence and being there with them. Which brings me to accompaniment. So accompaniment is the model that the ELCA uses, the global new model for global missions. I don't know exactly how new it is now, but in terms of the history of the church, relatively new. So I'll read what the Global Mission has on their website. Accompaniment is defined as walking together in a solidarity that practices interdependence and mutuality. The ELCA lives out accompaniment in relationships with global companions, striving to share God's love and participate in God's mission together. So that's supposed to be the focus of our year, which initially can be like hard to digest because you're like, all right, I'm going abroad for a year. I'm going to do all this work. I'm going to do all these great things. But it's really about more about actually people doing great things for you. So this is Pastor Erzbet. She wasn't technically my site mentor, but I had a strange situation with how things worked out. She already had another volunteer, but she's a pretty, pardon my language, kick-ass woman. There's no other way to describe her. And she's a single mom. Her job is she works with the Roma College Program, which they support Roma who are trying to go to university, which is pretty difficult in Hungary and Europe in general. And so she was always very supportive, and she found me my place to live. She was the one who drove me to the police station when my bike got stolen. She was the person that I went to if I needed anything. She wasn't just there for us. She was the one who would call us out on our privilege, pointing it out when we were with the Roma College students and we were getting treated differently than them. Just not accusing us of anything, but just making sure that we recognize the situation or recognize that we're getting treated differently because we were Americans living in Hungary versus other women living in Hungary. And so I think she accompanied me more than I accompanied her. And she really was this presence that showed me what it is to serve even when the system around you isn't supporting the same things you are. So especially like what it looks like to serve in a right-wing government is one of the blog posts that I wrote. And that's Pastor Erzbet. So this is, every year she has her volunteers plant trees in her garden. So this is me planting my tree in her garden on Good Friday. So I think my favorite story of my own accompaniment alongside others is this is Donnie. He was 6 years old in this picture. He might be 7 now. His family had just moved into the Añovo while I was working there. And he, you know, all of the circumstances of the families living there aren't, you know, they're not there because good things are happening. But my favorite part every day is he always wanted to try on everything I was wearing. So he wanted my watch, he wanted my sunglasses. If I had a jacket, he probably wanted to wear my jacket. And he would run around just saying, "Oh, I'm Miriam, I'm Miriam." But he couldn't say my name. He said an L instead of an R. He's like, "I'm Miriam, I'm Miriam." And just to be able to be with someone, like to be able to take his mind off of whatever's going on in his life and spend an hour with him three times a week was great. Yeah.
Are these facilities church-related, or who supports them?
Yeah, so these are all supported by the church, but they also get funding from the state. But it's technically run through the Hungarian Lutheran Church, yeah. They've got... The ministry I worked for is just a small portion of their many ministries, which I'll talk about in a minute, I think. Yeah, so the things I want you guys to know about Hungary is, first of all, God's already present there. The point of Yagim isn't to send these missionaries, we're missionaries, which has a bit of a connotation to it, but our goal isn't to go out and, you know, evangelize all of these different people, or, like, God is already present here. And the way in which I most felt God's presence there was through music was a big part of it. So I sang, like I said, in the choir at the big church. And so this is us at a choir festival for the whole Hungarian Lutheran Church, which was really exciting that we qualified to do that. And it was especially in celebration of the 500th Reformation. And that was a really big part, singing in the choir. It was where I really felt I got to form relationships outside of work. Mostly older married couples, or just older women, or just middle age and above.
Your parents.
Yeah. But it was actually quite a big choir. And in particular, there were the soprano section. So this is Yulia right here. She was the first day we showed up in choir. So I say we because I sang with the other American volunteer there, Rebecca. We both sang in the choir. And the minute we show up the first week, it was honestly like coming to Bethel. Like, oh, like everyone was so welcoming, wanted to see if we needed help in any way, you know, gave us their cards, call them if we need anything. But Yulia, she made us homemade. She was always giving us these gifts. So, like, it's in Wisconsin, but a tote bag, because she wasn't happy with how we were carrying our music to choir. We needed the tote bag that everybody else had, so she made us the tote bag. And then Gabor and Judit. So I have a picture of them later, but so this is Judit. Gabor is probably taking the picture. And they called us their American daughters. And so he did speak some English and spoke German, so we were actually able to have more in-depth conversations than a lot of the people. But the way he opened his home to us, they fed us, my parents were there, he insisted on driving us. He's like, no, you're not taking the bus, I'm driving your parents. Took the time to show my parents the church, gave them the book he wrote about the church. Just one of the kindest people I've ever met, and most generous. So music was their presence, the way Bethel, in which I feel God's presence at Bethel, I felt in the choir. The other two ways music was very important to me there was I actually once a month was the organist at my church. I've played the piano my entire life. I've never played the organ before. But they heard I played the keyboard, I knew how to play the piano, they're like, oh, okay, so you can do this. Okay. In my church community, which was pretty small, the church maybe worshipped 20 people on a Sunday, but the membership was much larger, that's how I felt my role and initially felt like, okay, I am a valued member of this community. It was one Sunday, the organist, I didn't know he wasn't going to be there. And so the pastors come in right before church starts, and they're like, So it looks like the organist isn't here today, so we'll just kind of have to struggle through. And the old lady sitting next to me just like whips her head around, and she like she gives me a stare, and she's like, go to that organ. And I'm like, so I walked up and I played that organ. I didn't know what the music was going to be that day, but you know what? I rolled with it and it happened. Thankfully, the bar for organists in Hungary is pretty low, so it was okay. And then it was also, so our first night in Nyíregyháza, Rebecca and I, we were living in the dorm together at this point, and she was living with the Roma College students. And so they invited us to watch a movie with them, but then afterwards, you know, someone was like walking around with a guitar, and Rebecca also plays guitar, and they're like, oh, can you play this song? And so, you know, we start playing like Beyonce or what else were we playing? But other, you know, other popular songs, and just immediately, like, most of these students didn't speak very good English. And it's especially, I mean, they're outsiders in their community. They're outsiders in Hungary. But for them to welcome us in and for us to be able to connect over this shared love of music was really amazing. So that was, I think music was the biggest, for me, the most obvious way in which I felt God's presence in Hungary, but also through the families and different relationships that we were forming. So this is Pastor Geza, who is one of my other supervisors. He didn't speak any English, but he spoke German, so thankfully we were able to communicate, because he was a very, very cool person. But this is his family, or his kids. So this is Esther, Noemi, Yuri, and Donnie. And these are some of the cool, I mean, I hung out with some pretty cool kids in Hungary, but these were some of the coolest. Like Esther was the best Hungarian teacher I had. Like I was paying money once a week to go and get these Hungarian lessons. And I really should have just been hanging out with Esther more, because she could, like, most kids couldn't understand that, like, when I said I didn't understand, they would repeat the same thing over and over again, but just slower or one syllable at a time. It's like, I don't know what those words mean. But she understood it. So she would, I'd be like, I don't understand. She'd be like, she would sit there and she would think. And then she would explain it in a different way. And then she would ask me what something meant in English, and then I would, and so we would go back and forth. So, yeah, and Jerry was maybe the cutest kid I've ever seen. Maybe, I say this because, of course, I have the most adorable niece and nephew in the world. But besides that, he was pretty amazing. And but just to have children and people there who, when they saw you, their face lit up and they ran up to you, that was really important. And it was a real gift from this family and from the kids of the Añovo as well. Let's see. And as much as I love Hungary, though, it has its problems. It is quite a poor nation. The unemployment is extremely high. But despite this general having less wealth, there's still the comforts that we have here. One of the ways in which I first realized that maybe it's not as wealthy as I like really connected that it wasn't as wealthy as the U.S. is that, you know, in the U.S. we have like pianos everywhere. Like, you know, standing right next to a piano, we've got like two or three other pianos in the church. You know, I go to school, there's, you know, pianos in every classroom. We have a piano at our house, like, but you don't see pianos in Hungary. They're not sitting around everywhere. Most churches don't have a piano. They maybe have a harmonium, which you have to work with pedals to make any noise, or an electric organ. And of course, the big churches have their big, gorgeous organs, but maybe don't even have a piano. And so that really connected with me. I'm like, oh, pianos are expensive. They can't afford pianos, which is a weird thing to connect to, oh, they have less wealth, but it was something that stood out to me. So, I mean, are a lot more aware of how much resources they're using. And so the lights were never on in the house during the day, which was fine. We didn't need them. We could see without them. You know, heat was conserved quite a bit. You didn't heat rooms that you weren't in. So there was basically one room in the apartment that we didn't really use in the winter except to cool. It was like an extra fridge. And so, yeah, so, and of course, poverty usually affects those who are marginalized more than the elite in the society. So the Roma are disproportionately in poverty than the ethnic Hungarians. And so it's also a very racist society, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so, what was the story? Yeah, so, I mean, just a story. So this is the Roma College program. And I remember one time one of the students, he showed up to an exam, but he wasn't wearing like a jacket and tie, and so they didn't let him take the exam. Which seems ridiculous. And it was, and then they weren't going to let him retake the exam either. Where, I mean, pretty clear that if an ethnic Hungarian student had showed up to this exam and had forgotten to wear a jacket and tie, like, you would have let him take the exam. And also, like, right when we got there, one of the students hurt his leg, basically refused to help him at the hospital. These are small, like, these are the things that they're actually experiencing. What I heard is, you know, just when people heard that I was working with Roma, they're like, oh, and would just espouse the stereotypes around Roma, which I won't even honor by mentioning. But so it's, in particular, in the homeless shelter, the daily shelter I was working in, when people would come in for food, I got the question, even from one of the people working there, like, oh, what do you think of all the Roma and the homeless? As if these were two different categories, as if the Roma were not simply only, like, that there was, oh, Roma, they're just like this, and then you have the people who are homeless, even from the people working there. So that was difficult. So it's not a perfect country. And you can see, so this is some of the families at the Anyovo during Christmas. And so this is Jolti, Dominic, Emmanuel, Amanda, another Dominic. Those are the ones I was close with. And all Roma. This shelter wasn't for Roma people, but those were the people who were in poverty. So if you want to know more about anti-gypsyism, I wrote about it in one of my newsletters, and so I can share that with you if you want to know more. I don't want to go on too long because I could go on for a while. Another thing I want you to know about Hungary is the aggressive hospitality is the word one of my friends used. So this is the main story I want to tell about Jutsinéni. So Jutsinéni made all of these cakes. So, I mean, I don't know how someone does this. Like, she literally, like, cuts two different cakes, layers them together, like, I don't know. And then this is the surprise birthday cake she made for me. And these are the she made three different cakes for New Year's Eve. And then this is my favorite dish. Tortilla kaposa, stuffed cabbage, and of course you have to eat it with sour cream. Anyway, and so was like, well, I guess I have to take this kid in, I think is an example of this hospitality. Just, it's not necessarily polite. In fact, nothing about Hungarians I say what is polite. Everything is said in the imperative. Like, no, you come here, or you eat that, or you do your laundry, or you come home. And it's all in the imperative. And but just her graciousness, anytime I was going on a train trip, I was like, I'll take one sandwich with me. And she would, so then she would go to the store to buy this stuff, and she would come back with four rolls to make sandwiches. I'm like, you see, Nanny, I only need, I'll take two sandwiches. She's like, and so I took four sandwiches with me. You know, I was like, oh, I don't, you know, I can't take that much cake with me. Like, I'm only going to be on the train for this long, and I would get a case like this square completely filled with cake. I'm not going to eat all of this. But that was her, that was her taking care of me. That was how you treat people when they come into your home. And by the end of the year, I think I was a little bit less of a guest. But I was still a guest somewhat. This wasn't just Yutzi Nanny. But I think a perfect example of this, so when my parents had, it was very nice that my parents were able to come and visit me, that I was in a placement that my parents could come and see. She insisted that when they came, they stay at our apartment, which it's not a very big apartment. And she's retired. Her daughter also doesn't, like, she doesn't have a lot of money. She has enough. But she insisted on having them. And then she also, as a woman, doesn't drink any alcohol. But there's this traditional beverage or spirit in Hungary called palenka. This is an empty bottle of it. But she doesn't drink it, but it's like very true. If someone comes over to your house, most families have a homemade palenka. And so, but so as soon as my parents walk in the door, you know, off their long flight, 3-hour train ride, then after that, she's like, palenka? And it's like, one, I didn't know she had palenka in the house because I don't, you know, she doesn't drink. And then that this is, as soon as someone walks into her home, she wants them to feel welcomed. And it was aggressive, but it was still the intent behind it was to welcome someone into her home. So that's how I felt all year long. Which was, you know, frustrating at times because it's like, you too, Nini, I just want to sleep until 10 without you judging me. But it didn't happen.
She missed her dog.
Yeah. So then the last things I want to talk about is what I got from Hungary. And I got a new family and a new home. So, I mean, that family is Yutzi Nanny. It's the other volunteers who were in Hungary with me and our country coordinators. Rachel is our country coordinator, and this is her husband, Zach. And these are my other volunteers. And that's Bishop Eden, if you didn't recognize. This was at Kirchentag in Germany. And it was the pastors who supported me and Jury as well. And I mean, so when I went off to college, I would never say that became my home, but very quickly, these people welcomed me in and showed me aggressive hospitality and gave me a role in the community, whether it was playing the organ or hanging out with their kids. And so it quickly became home. Let's see. Can we change it? I can start talking about it if it's not. I'm also, as a result of my Yagamir, become a lot more okay with impermanence. So, you know, this is me right before leaving for Yagam, graduating from Northwestern. Now with my new group of classmates at Wisconsin, and realizing that, you know, things are going to end, and so, like, it was very hard to leave Hungary. It was very hard to leave my family and community here, and it was just as hard, if not harder, to leave that community in Hungary. But realizing that there's always a community anywhere in the world, especially a community in Christ that will welcome you and support you, has made definitely going off to Madison a lot easier. It also made leaving Hungary a lot easier, realizing that, you know, these people love me, but there are going to be people who love me here, and they're going to have someone new to love. There's going to be a new volunteer to come in, and they're going to support that volunteer the way they supported me. So that's one of the ways I've been impacted by this year. Another is that things, you know, anything can become normal if you live in it long enough. I think after my year in Hungary, like, hearing about my friends who were living in Cambodia or Australia or Southern Africa, like, sometimes it would sound like, man, what are they doing? That's pretty weird. But then I realized, you know what? What I'm doing now seemed pretty weird 2 months ago. It can't be that weird. If you're living in it every day, it must be pretty normal, which was one of the frustrating things about being in Hungary is a lot of people, especially Yitzi Nani, couldn't comprehend that life could be different anywhere else. She thought it was ridiculous that we don't eat soup every day in the United States. And, like, at the end of the year, we're still laughing at it. She's like, oh, yes, you don't eat soup in the summer, and would laugh. And it's like, I know, things are different somewhere else in the world. That's crazy. But after my year in Hungary, and living with a very different lifestyle, I would say. But it became normal in the span of 3 months. And now, jumping back into life in the United States felt strange at first, but, you know, it becomes normal. Life as a graduate student becomes normal pretty quick. A lot less, I think, judgment of people living lives differently in different countries. So I guess these pictures, this is from the pig slaughter, which I had never been to a pig slaughter before, and this is boiled pork blood and onion. And it actually wasn't half bad, you know? This isn't what I served this morning. But this is normal, and this is just a part of life. And then second languages are hard. And so I definitely have a lot more understanding for people trying to live in a community in which they're not speaking their native language. Because, at both the university I've been at, there's been a lot of international students. And it was easy to be like, oh, man, it's so frustrating. I can't understand what this TA is saying. But no, that's, like, they're teaching something in a language that's not their own. And this is complex material. I couldn't even, just saying where I was from was difficult in a second language. I think a lot more understanding for that. Is another thing I took out of the year, which is a little bit smaller, but Hungarian's really hard as well, so I will say that. I think, in summary, I really did feel God's grace while I was in Hungary. And it was mostly through these groups of people. I've talked about Yitzi Nani a lot, so I didn't feel a need to show another picture of her. But this is Gábor and Judit, who were like our Hungarian parents. And it wasn't just through my relationships with Hungarians, but it's my fellow volunteers as well. Getting to spend a year getting to know other young people who are committed to serving the church and making the church a place that's more welcoming and, sharing of, are also committed to sharing God's grace with others, both in Hungary and now that we're back in the U.S. Was really amazing, and I definitely, like, one of the best things I took away from this year. So with that, I didn't give as much time for questions as I hoped, But I'd love to take any questions you have.
Lights?
Yeah.
I'm curious about the matter of the Roma, the gypsy. I was in Hungary about 20 years ago, and the group I was with, we heard mostly from the Reformed Church, leaders and lay people.
Mm-hmm.
The leaders of the Reformed Church never said anything about the Roma. We would ask a question, and it was kind of, yeah, they're a problem. The lay people would say, you know, the Roma people are really discriminated against. They are stereotyped. Then they'd say, if you go in the town, watch out for the beggars, watch out for the Romans. My question is, are you aware of whether the Lutheran Church in Hungary has made any kind of statement or attempts to challenge the prejudice and the discrimination against the Roma? You know, the LCA
Social statements, yeah. No, I don't. I'm not aware about what kind of social statements the church is making and the Lutheran Church is making in Hungary. What the form of that looks like. I do know quite a bit about the Lutheran Church treatment of the Roma problem, and quite often it's about evangelizing, bringing the gospel to them, and sometimes cloaked in, okay, we'll give you this children's home, which is where one of my friends worked. Actually, he worked in a children's home, which isn't an orphanage. It was like a place people could bring their kids before they were too young for school. It was a way for them to socialize before going off to school. But then it's like, you know, you can bring your kids here, but then you really should come to our Bible study. And even, yeah, and a lot of ministries was, you know, oh, we feel pity, and so we're going to help you out because this is our requirement as Christians, is to, you know, help those who are beneath us, basically, which is, I mean, they still saw them as beneath them. So which is one of the reasons Pastor Erzba was so radical and so cool, is that, like, she got it. She's like, no, this is all messed up. There's nothing wrong with them. It's this institutional issues, discrimination that we have, that's the issue, which is one of the reasons it was really cool to work with her. But I mean, a lot of my fellow volunteers were working in placement sites that were maybe didn't have that understanding of the Roma problem, as they call it. So, yeah.
So. What percentage of the population is Roma?
Yeah, I think it's like 10% maybe. 10%.
Can you say what you mean? Well, what is the Roma problem?
Oh, that they're extremely poor, and many people's opinion lazy. I don't know if it's an opinion or is a perceived a stereotype and prejudice that there is against them. And I mean, it's very, when we first got to Hungary, the way we had it explained to us was in comparison to the black person's experience in the U.S. Very similar, a pretty similar history actually too. And there are subtle differences, but like this massive, like, you know, institutional discrimination going back hundreds and hundreds of years, and especially, like, you know, even though, like, I like to think I'm pretty with it in terms of, like, racial justice, but I still have these prejudices which I actively have to combat. And people are not actively combating their Roma stereotypes and prejudices in Hungary. They kind of just say it without abandon, which is pretty weird to get used to, because at least there's, like, most people in the U.S. realize that, oh, maybe I shouldn't sound super racist, even if I am. There is at least enough of a shame against that in our country, but not as much there. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess the Roma problem is that they're living in much more poverty than the rest of the community.
Well, what are they really doing for them? Are they setting them up with housing?
It So like I said, it depends. A lot of people aren't doing anything, but most of the mission to them is providing food or one of the placements one of the volunteers was doing was working with kids and then women living in a Roma village so that they could have a job doing handicrafts. So like they would take drawings that kids had done and then the women would make them into bags and then sell them, or other pieces or like wallets or totes or other things. And so then that was a way for them to make money. But it was a common theme in terms of the approach to it was we need to help them out so that it can be more like us. That's their issue, is that they're not like us. Us being non-Roma ethnic Hungarians. So, Valerie.
And that there's some potential future Yagams.
Mm-hmm.
What's the basic process for becoming a...
Yeah, so the requirement is that you have to at least be 21, but then most of the programs also require a college degree, not all of them. And so then you apply in February, and then you find out maybe a month later, you do a phone interview, and you don't get a whole lot of say in where you get to go. But yeah, so the countries are Mexico, Argentina, Uruguay, the UK. You can ask Claire about the UK. Hungary. Or I guess Central Europe, since they're in more than just Hungary now. They have a volunteer in Serbia this year. Southern Africa, Senegal, Madagascar, Rwanda, Jerusalem, West Bank, Cambodia, and Australia. So you don't really get to choose. But when you get accepted to the program, you go to an interview weekend and you interview with two different countries. And then after the end of that weekend, you get to like write down your preference or any input you have. But then ultimately it's up to the church. So it worked out for me that I did want to go to Hungary, and I got to go to Hungary, but that's not always the case.
Do you have to pay something for this experience?
I mean, I chose to. I chose to contribute money to it. But you're asked to raise, when I did it, was $4,000. Now students or volunteers are asked to raise $5,000. Yeah, but they're... lots of congregations like Bethel who support you more than is needed. And there are some people who don't have communities like Bethel. And so the money that other volunteers, if they're able to raise more money than that, can go to support. So, I mean, all the money isn't, so the money I raised didn't go straight to me. It went to the program at large. So it costs like $13,000 to send a single volunteer for an entire year. So the ELCA is investing money in this because they want to bring back informed and inspired young people to the church is the reasoning they give. So I'm very grateful that they did. Other questions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Pastor Erzsébet, who you say was with it,
mm-hmm.
in terms of understanding the institutional racism.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a sense of how she was perceived among her peers or in the community as being sort of a... because she was somewhat outspoken about this, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
What type of response did she get from people? Or could you tell because, you know, the language barriers?
Yeah, I couldn't... I don't really know, because I didn't really see those interactions.
Did she talk about that at all?
Not a whole lot. She talked. Tried to wake us up to a lot of stuff going on in Hungary, but she never told us about that. I mean, I know she felt a lot of pushback. I don't know how much of it was because she was a woman versus how much of it was because what she was trying to do. But yeah.
Is there a lot of sexism?
Yeah, there's a lot of sexism. Yeah, I didn't even talk about that, but yeah. But actually, it's funny because women have actually been able to be ordained in the Hungarian Lutheran Church longer than here in the U.S., but there's like still no women in positions of leadership in the church, really. So, yeah.
Well, that's my question.
Yeah.
Women clergy.
Yeah. Well, because there's still this, there was the other woman pastor in our congregation was also Pastor Erzsébet. And she actually spent some time in St. Louis studying at, not obviously as a pastor, but doing stuff with the Missouri Synod, I think, a little bit. At Concordia, I don't know. She had some connection to Concordia in St. Louis. But she was very, I would always ask her, oh, how are you doing? And she'd be like, oh, well, my kids are upset with me. You know, they were, because I got home late yesterday and they were starving. I'm just like, you know, she always had this, like, you know, it was her responsibility, even though both her and her husband were pastors. But she was the one who still had to make all the food. She's like, yeah, like, I'm going away for the weekend, so I have to cook all this food because otherwise my husband and my boys will starve. And it's like, but my, I mean, this is kind of, like, ridiculous and awful, but so ridiculous I think it's funny. So I would go to the youth group on Friday evenings, and it was mostly these, like, teenage boys and, you know, a few young girls as well. And funnily enough, they're all related and all related to my host mom as well. So they're a very big family. And so, but if a guy walks in the room, if the pastor or even just another teenage boy walks in the room, they go around the room and there are like maybe 10 people there and they shake every single male's hand and just like walk straight by the girls or the women. Just like, well, like say hey, but like, well, they don't shake your hand. And which is like ridiculous. And like, but like that's what you do. And one time, so they would deliver the lunch to the homeless shelter I was at. And sometimes, like, so we would go out there with our cart to roll in the pots. And the guy who's delivering it one day, he didn't realize it was me out there with the cart. So he turns around before he looks up and offers his hand and then sees me there. And he's like, oh, ha, 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 and like takes his hand away. Like it's so ridiculous that I would shake your hand. So, yeah.
Oh, just for information, Vandalia, Illinois, mm-hmm. had a female pastor, mm-hmm. Hungarian. Mm. She came to ELCA, or she came to LSCC in Chicago, because she realized that it would take her a long time to become ordained in Hungary. So her first call was at Vandalia. She was there for 8 years.
Huh.
But she left Hungary so that she could be
a pastor. Huh. That's interesting. Yeah.
How long is
it?
I thought maybe you might have been in.
Can you say just a few things about your experience at the Kirchentag in Berlin, right?
Yeah. I brought backup slides. So this is actually, and so they don't really want you to travel a whole lot as a Yagam, because the main point is to, oh, yeah, I also got to see Genevieve Schmoker in Vienna, okay. But because you're supposed to be there with your communities, and especially when you're living in communities that it's not really, like, they don't have the resources to travel. But Kirchentag, which translates to Church Day, for those who don't speak German, and it's this big festival held about every other year, every 3 years in Germany. And this year it was in Berlin, and this was the first year the ELCA had an official participation in the event, and so they needed people to staff their booth. They're like, oh, we've got a group of Yagam over there. We'll just, you know, bring them up and they'll staff our booth, so which we were happy to do. So it was pretty great to be. It's a Protestant event for all the Protestant churches in Germany, and it was pretty amazing. So we got to the reason we were there was to work at the ELCA Global Missions booth, and talk to people as they came around. So it was really cool to talk to people about, we had something in our booth about, like, if you could say one thing to the U.S. right now, like, what would it be? And so we got a lot of hopeful things. Then we also had one old lady who just wrote Scheisse on a piece of paper and stuck it up on the wall, which means, pardon my language again, Scheisse in German means shit. So it's like, all right, people were honest with us. And, you know, sometimes that's what I want to write about the U.S. too right now. But a lot of things of hope and, like, you know, we're praying for you, like, but also, you know, like, you know, acknowledging the U.S.'s responsibility and the impact that we have on the rest of the world. So that was interesting to get to talk to people about all the things that Global Mission is doing in the ELCA. Was really cool. I actually met someone who came by the booth who is an American pastor working in Hamburg who was friends with Ed Schrader, of course. So, you know, you go anywhere in the world, you're going to meet someone who's, you know, the Lutheran world really is small, basically, is one of the things I learned. But this is the opening worship. A lot of the things were in German, but then a lot of them, so most of the things were in German, some of them were in simple German, and there were some things in English. So most of our group went to the English speaking, in the English language things. It was really fun for me because I got to go to the German language things, and that was fun to practice my German. So that was really cool. So this is the opening worship. And we got to, it was actually also really cool because Bishop Eaton was there doing a number of things. And so got to, you know, I was very unhappy with the election. And I think it was, you know, the many members of the ELCA, you know, must have voted for our current president, which was pretty frustrating when I, you know, how is someone who's in the same denomination as me voting for this? So to kind of, but then to hear from our bishop, and it's like, okay, it seems like maybe in churchwide they have, they're trying, although imperfectly, of course, but trying nonetheless. So that was comforting a little bit. I didn't get to talk to her as much as I wanted, but of course she's a busy person. So that was the opening worship. This is the Holocaust Memorial in Berlin. We walked through that one of our days. If you're ever in Berlin, I suggest going there. It's pretty powerful. But then the coolest thing I got to do, maybe the one of the coolest things I've ever done in my life, is President Obama was speaking about religion and politics with Chancellor Merkel in front of the Brandenburg Gate, and there were 70,000 people. So from, I couldn't get a picture of it from where we were, but we were pretty close, so like we could see, but couldn't get a picture. But so four of us, of the volunteers, were able to go, and it was insane. I don't even know like how to explain it. It was like I can't believe I got to do that. I'm pretty sure it's online if like you want to watch it, but it was pretty cool to hear. Like, it was like so refreshing as well after like a few months of the current presidency to be like, no, this is still our country. So that was nice. And then got a chance to meet like lots of different people from all over the world. So this is a friend I made from Cameroon in a workshop I went to. So this is from a workshop I went to. It was two Lutheran bishops talking about, it was like liberation by God's grace or something, and talking about it in different, their different contexts. So it was the bishop from Liberia and the bishop from Philippines, and the bishop from Costa Rica got sick and couldn't come. So that was really cool. Went to a workshop on climate change, calling for a new theology. And then on the last day of the conference, everyone went down to Wittenberg, and there was a big worship in a field there. And so Wittenberg is where, you know, Luther nailed the theses to the church door. So it was really cool to worship with people from all around the world there in celebration of the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, which was another, like, experience that kind of like blew my mind. Like the chance to go to Wittenberg at all was like pretty cool, because I like love church history. And then to get to do it during my Yagim year with my group of Yagim was unbelievable. And to do it during the 500th like celebration of the Reformation was like yeah, it was crazy. So that was really, really cool. Yeah, and one more thing about, I guess, if I'm talking about the Reformation is, so they're really obsessed with the hymn, "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God," in the Hungarian Lutheran Church. And so, like, when the pastor comes into church, he or she says, "Erushvar Mishnung," which means "A mighty fortress is our God," and the whole congregation says it back. And, you know, I mentioned the pessimism in Hungary and this history of occupation and losing revolution after revolution, and this idea of, like, persisting through, you know, God being a fortress that, okay, we're going to survive this. We have, you know, God on our side. It's, like, really important, I think. And so I think it's especially clear in their obsession with that hymn. I don't think there's a better word for it. Yeah, so I think we're out of time, but thank you again. And I'm happy to answer questions after church as well.